What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the Fight Network's downtown studio. I am your host, John Ramdean. This is Robin Black. This is Five Rounds today, and there's a ton of stuff happening before the year's end. And if you look over the next 5 weeks, just really the apex of mixed martial arts competition. You and I are making the pilgrimage to the nation's capital. It's an area that I'm very, very familiar with. Grew up just an hour south of Ottawa. You've spent some time in Ottawa. And, of course, to go there, to get to be cage side or ringside or in the back or whatever, as this incredible welterweight battle in the main event, UFC Fight Night, Rory McDonald and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. You think when we first started watching mixed martial arts or No Holds Barred or whatever it was back in the early to mid-90s, did you expect that this experiment would help develop martial arts? Because you look at Stephen Thompson and you look at Rory McDonald, two of the most evolved fighters maybe ever.
Yeah, I definitely did think that. But nowhere
I did
could
not.
Have ever.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I thought it was because as soon as we saw jiu-jitsu, it's like, oh, that you have to learn that.
But there's ego involved. And the reason why I say that is like you get tapped out. It's like, well, that stuff's not going to work on the streets.
But,
or that won't, you know what I mean?
By the time we got into 20, 30 of these, so we had seen all of the UFC. We started to see what was going on in Pride. If you had VHS tapes or whatever you could do, you saw these other ones. And you saw, oh, so I think what I thought is, oh, now we have to learn all of it. I didn't realize it would at all. It would have been impossible to predict that it would evolve the sport itself.
Well, wasn't this stuff out there? I mean, all of this was available to people. It's like, okay, you could go into a wrestling room. Mm-hmm. You could go into a judo academy. You could go and learn Western boxing. You could go to Eric Paulson's and learn catch wrestling. All of this stuff was available to martial artists, people looking for the truth. Why all of a sudden did, after all of these years of seeing it, after seeing what the whether it's Gracie in action or the UFC, that people said, okay, I need to become a complete fighter?
First of all, this makes me realize like so much that we learn as we're continuing to study and research and try to learn and getting the information that we see every single week and trying to distill it down. All you keep learning is that Bruce Lee was so brilliant on levels philosophically and about the martial arts, on levels so high that we're only starting to really understand it now. And there are other people in other areas of anything that have been that way, whether it's, you know, Einstein with physics and other, you know, related sciences and Aristotle and all these people. There are people who come along in any field that are just so far ahead.
But when Bruce Lee, and I'm going to cut you off because, again, everybody looks at Bruce Lee as kind of the grandfather of modern day martial arts, of mixed martial arts, so to speak. And you read some of his Fighting Concepts books, and it's like, okay, well, that makes sense. You have to be a physical specimen. You have to work your body.
People didn't do that.
But if this was the guy that everybody says was the genius, why wasn't everybody doing
this? There's a lot of things that you can see. It's like, well, if you want to be successful now, go study computer programming, go study tech, absorb these. There's a lot of things we could study and go, oh, if you have a kid, just program them with that and they'll have a successful life. Or you want to be rich, you want to be – it's all there. But how and why you decide to apply it or do it is very different. But Bruce Lee, for example, what you were saying, you know, a little bit ago about these – all those styles are there. Bruce Lee was like, you could see his frustration sometimes when he talked about it. It's like, it's not about styles.
Yeah.
It's not about...
He didn't even want to call it Jeet Kune Do. It's like, okay, this is... I'm forced to call it a name, but this is...
We shouldn't call it MMA either,
but
you got to call it something.
It's
fighting. It's fighting. It's combat. It's hand-to-hand combat. It's how humans fight unarmed. It's unarmed combat. And it's all... And Bruce Lee was like, oh, this is what's better, karate or kung fu? It's like... It's not about styles. It's about taking these things. But if you grew up in a karate school, you'd be like, I don't know what Bruce Lee's talking about. It's obviously about karate. And that went for every martial art. Never mind the glaring obvious holes like, well, I'm on the ground now. I don't know what to do. It's like, well, if you're fighting, you have to know what to do there. So in that respect, when we first saw it start happening, we were like, oh, okay, these guys are going to learn jiu-jitsu. And then the wrestlers came in and shut them down and headbutted them.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we better learn that. And then, well, what if we learned it? And it became about – about gathering all of the knowledge. And then once all of the knowledge was gathered, the knowledge that people were sort of saying was the knowledge. I mean, there's glaring holes, and there always will be. And one of the holes, and what kind of started this conversation about evolution, is the hole of what can happen if you're way on the outside and I can't get to you. And if I can't get to you, what do I do? And if I'm trying to get to you and you can hurt me now, what do I do? Mm-hmm. That's Stephen Thompson. That's what Holly Holm can do. She does it differently. She boxes out to distance.
And those are two traditional martial arts, whether it's, you know, the sweet science that many people would consider it to be the most dominant martial art. That, of course, if you you need the wrestling base. But if you can apply mixed martial arts boxing, because it's all about foot movement first, foot movement and timing. And you look at Stephen Thompson's karate background, another traditional background. Are these arts designed, you know, maybe not at the time consciously, but when you look at these arts, Taekwondo as well, when you look at those and see how they fit into the bigger picture, is there an advantage of traditional of having that traditional martial arts background in the modern day?
I think if we look at this as where we are now and how you get to where we are now, the route that you come from. If you come from boxing and you come from that sort of smaller footwork, you come up through a certain route, and on the way up, the way to beat that, Stephen Thompson's game, when his father and he were sort of adapting from competing in karate and kickboxing to competing in the mixed world, was we can beat boxing with this game. You know, so it became still a style versus style on the way to developing no style. And the best style is there is no style. And in the real world, there is no style. If you assign a style to how you fight, you're assigning limiting factors. Mm-hmm. You're saying, we do this.
Yeah.
Well, if you do that, then and you don't do these things, then you're not good at these things. So I'll make you do those things.
I think the reason why, when you look at Stephen Thompson, people consider him a karate fighter because you see specific techniques utilized in the art of the empty hand.
Yeah.
So you can understand why it's like, okay, this guy's a karate fighter. Sure, I'm not really a karate fighter because I do all these things, but there are certain techniques that I use, and that can be said with many fighters. Ronda Rousey, for example. You know, she's a judo fighter, but she's a mixed martial arts fighter.
Sure.
But the techniques that she uses and that she favors are from a specific path.
But we're all it's all moving towards no style. And if we say this is as no style as we've ever been as a competitive
Rory
fighting
is
culture,
like that.
Yeah, now whatever the best of them are as least styled martial artists as they've ever been, and they'll continue to get more that way. But in doing so, we can do anything. We can create any scenario. You're free to fight in any way. It's not my boxing versus your wrestling. They blend. If we're doing that, we still have things we got good at on our route to the no style, and as no style as it is, because it's still a accumulation of styles and pieces styles. But let's pretend it's sort of no style compared to what it was. On the route to develop to being styleless or formless, we came up through karate, so we're really good at something.
Yep.
And that is playing on the outside, making you chase, intercepting
game.
You. Yeah, that thing we're good at. So we're going to make it formless, but if you can't beat that thing I've been doing all my life, our formlessness will take the form of this, you know, and this is what we'll do. If you beat that, my options are two, basically. Either, well, that's all I got, so I lost.
Yeah, right.
Or, I got other things, so even though you're beating this thing, that's okay, we're formless. We can do anything. But to be truly formless is to be capable everywhere. And Wonder Boy, everybody says his jiu-jitsu is better, and the book, you know, the sort of accepted thing that we all say is, well, he's been training wrestling with Chris Weidman, so his wrestling's better, and he did show the ability to disengage against Hendricks, but that doesn't mean he can hang with Rory. The big thing he's got good at is not just stopping you from getting to his hips, but creating a scenario of not accepting a position. So it's still a non-position. Oh, I'm down, but it's a non-position. I'm on my arm. It's a non-position. I have one underhook. It's a non-position I'm getting. If he accepts a bottom position, he's dead. He's dead. If you accept a bottom position against Rory
especially,
and you have more than 45, less than more than 45 seconds left, you're dead.
You're in big
if you have
trouble.
Less than 45 seconds
you
left and somehow
survive.
You survive,
yeah.
Then we get back to that game of stopping Rory from gathering a position. But the best way for Rory not to get that dominant position is Stephen never let him get a hold of him.
How important is training partners? We know that Chris Weidman's going to be in Ottawa. Aljamain Sterling going to be in Ottawa to support, of course, Stephen Thompson as he takes on one of the biggest challenges, if not the biggest challenge of his career. Are training partners important?
I believe they are. I believe they are for a lot of reasons. I mean,
Luke Rockhold and Luke Rockhold just had Dan Cormier and Cain Velasquez, two guys that were getting ready for their biggest fights, lost to a guy who took a fight on 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, right? There's nothing's definitive. The more that we see, the amount of variables that there is. But what training partners is great because you feel that group, that collective.
Yeah,
you see the Diaz brothers, man.
Yeah.
They roll deep, you know?
Yeah.
They feel strong, and they can feel there's a love, like there's a family, we got each other's back.
Yeah.
I know that if some guys over here, Gil will mess this guy up.
Yeah.
I know that, you know? I know my brother is standing here. Jake is standing here. I've known these guys forever. That feeling that those guys get, that matters. But, you know, we've talked in the weeks coming up about how Firas has seen Wonderboy and understands his game and has guys, including Mandel Nalo, who's been training with Rory, who's built similar games. But at the same time, you know, Weidman trained with Rory. He's in Wonderboy's corner. There are a lot of people know Rory, too. But knowing Rory and knowing really what a ferocious Rory is, when Rory's ferocious, that's a whole different thing. There will come a time where we will appreciate Robbie Lawler even more for those round fours and fives and stuff with Rory, once we even see more of what Rory's capable of.
We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the main event of the Fight Night Show in Ottawa, as well as the co-featured bout as Patrick Cote takes on Donald Cerrone at 170 pounds. Don't go anywhere. More Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds today. Ram Dean and Black with you, and got to give a shout out to our man Mike Fife from the Fife Report for always hooking it up. We have really the best viewers, and you know, when we look at what's going down in Ottawa, many people believe that Patrick Cote is going to have a breakout performance. Mm-hmm. But before we get to, I guess Patrick Cote is before we get to the main event. Before we get to Patrick Cote, we're going to continue our focus on the main event. Rory McDonald. I think when you take a step back and you look at mixed martial arts, you have to remember there are human beings that get involved. A lot of time we look at athletes as just a different level of species, and that they're not they don't have emotions. Mm-hmm. They don't have to deal with trauma. I've been told by very credible sources that there's a former UFC champion that wakes up screaming in the middle of the night because of the trauma that they've dealt with inside of the cage. You wake up and somebody's punching you in the face. Of course, you can understand how that would affect you for the rest of your life. Rory McDonald, you can easily see how that last fight with Robbie Lawler can change you, and can change you not necessarily for the better. I mean, he says he looks at this as a way to understand what his body has been able to process. What can my body take? Robbie Lawler pushed me there. I now know that my body can handle that. Now, you and I were having this conversation about like what Michael Bisping said in the fight with Luke Rockhold. Every fight is different. It's independent from the last time. Even though Luke Rockhold smoked Michael Bisping in the first fight, it didn't go that way in the second fight. And who knows what would happen if they fought, if they fought a third time. And with that statement of Rory McDonald, he's like, okay, I now know what I can take. Is that a truth? I'm sure in his mind, that's a truth. But is that a truth? Everybody in mixed martial arts, coaches, trainers, fighters, they're all looking for the truths of combat.
Well, if we go a different way and you fail, then you've found out your limits. But we know that's not true. You can fail. and not be able to accomplish something in your life and go back and do it again and accomplish it. Get better, you know, improve.
Michael Bisping.
Michael Bisping, exactly. Perfect example. You can also achieve and then go back and fail.
Yeah.
Luke Rockhold, yeah. You know. So we know that's not true. But if you're talking about the limits of what a man's capable of, some of them, it's hard. It's hard to for us to fathom. We're regular humans, you know, and some of these guys are more than that. And I don't use that lightly, and I don't use that in a cartoony way.
But it conjures up ideas of, yep. of a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, I think if most people were to get punched in the face by an athlete, and I know these athletes are trained to take these, or remember Robbie Lawler had that big mm-hmm. slit open lip.
Most people don't scream exactly. when your lip will tear further with every with every ferocious scream that you do. Most of us go, ow!
Ooh. Exactly, and then fall to the ground and say, I need immediate medical attention.
Yeah, exactly.
So to see these comic book characters absorb the amount of punishment, it's hard for people to remember that they are human mm-hmm. beings and they deal with things that we all deal with.
It should be hard to, it's supposed to be hard to remember. You're supposed to be inspired by them. You're supposed to see that it's different. If they weren't, why would we be watching it?
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where we will, and we will look deep into these things and we'll compare them to what we know about, you know, my low-level fighting and then good fighters at the, you know, the RFA and the Titan,
yeah.
and then what we know against their training partners, and then what we know against a UFC guy, and then a great UFC guy, and then a Rory McDonald. There are differences. It is different. You're supposed to be moved by that. And sometimes you look and people are so easy to go, it wasn't that exciting of a fight. So, and every fight is something special. Every time human beings put their bodies on the line to push themselves to that limit, it is something very special. But I was speaking to Dan Hardy when we were doing a breakdown together, and I was saying something about Matt Brown or Rick Story or one of these guys, and I said, you know, some of these men are genetically more alpha than us. They're genetically better than us. And I said, us, while speaking to Dan Hardy, because normally I say that to speaking to us.
Yeah, right, right.
And us, the regular people.
Yeah, yeah.
Dan Hardy would be one of those
men. Yeah, right.
And he didn't say anything or respond to it, but you forget sometimes, like, this level is another level, and it's so easily, you know, dismissed. People, you know, Demetrius Johnson couldn't crack an egg. BJ would kill. This guy isn't that very good. When you realize that this endeavor can result in not only damage, but waking up screaming mm-hmm. in terror in the middle of the night for the rest of your life, you realize what's being asked. And it's something that I think gets lost very easily when we're talking about Twitter beefs and Rose's
yeah.
haircut and all of these things that we talk about. We forget what's actually going on there, and that's something we can't really let happen. We can't let a crowd go, you know, that guy sucks, he quit too easy or whatever. It's like, this is a very, very high-level endeavor that they're doing.
And, of course, the main event, when you look at Rory McDonald trying to rebound from that loss to Robbie Lawler, and he believes that mental strength has been gained because he knows now what he can take and that he feels that he can now be free to open up inside of the cage against Stephen Thompson. I'm assuming that's a good thing. Can you rely too heavily on that?
This one's so different. That's the thing.
We just don't know.
A lot of
the people that I've talked to when it comes to any types of fights, for the most part, there seems to be a clear path for the winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh yeah, I could see how so and so forth is going to win this fight. Dominic Cruz, it's like, okay, this makes sense how he would beat Uriah Faber in this last fight.
This is kind of the same thing as Uriah, only Rory is better at the modern version of
it. Right.
It's the same assignment, but Uriah, the things that made him great, he stuck with over the years, and the Dominic game evolved around that thing. So he became unable to get to him. It's the same assignment for Rory, but in theory, Rory has the ability
to
get to him. Yeah, he's equipped with the skills and the tools to do it. But it's still super hard to do. And it can be, you can't rush in. Hendricks rushed in and it was over quick. It's got I've got a breakdown out, people. Please, if you look for it, you might like it. And I looked at the act when you overthrow a castle, when you put it under siege, you set up close to it. You don't allow it to escape. You don't allow new resources to be accessed, and you slowly pick away at it and beat it through attrition. And that's the best, most reliable way to beat up Stephen Thompson is don't just storm in and get picked apart. Stop his movement by kicking and punching to the sides where he moves. He's coming. He's going this way. We whack him. He's going this way. We whack him. Sounds simple because it's simple.
Mm-hmm. So,
but it isn't simple. But the idea is simple.
Right.
He's moving to his right. We whack him with a left weapon. He's moving to his left. We whack him with a right weapon. And we shoehorn him in and we slowly pick him apart, slow him down, beat up his legs, and don't rush in and make it a long campaign like a siege.
So job number one for Rory MacDonald is do whatever you can to affect the mobility and the movement of Stephen Thompson. Once you deal with his mobility, things will open up, and then you can open up to land your kill shots.
Yeah, he has all these routes to get out of danger with us. So we got to take them away. And while we take them away, we hurt him so he's got an even harder time doing it. We hurt him to the body and we hurt him to the legs, so it's even harder for him to use mobility to use these roads. And it becomes easier for you. He's less mobile, so now we can stop him even better and make it get worse for him and better for us as the fight goes on. Easier said than done. And if you have a gun to my dog's head and say, pick the winner, I might go with Wonderboy. And I'm a big Rory fan, but I might go with Wonderboy.
I hear what you're saying. I have no pick. I've been trying to think about it in my brain. And it's one of these ones that who friggin' knows. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about more of the action that is going down in Ottawa, Ontario for UFC Fight Night. Welcome back, fight fans, to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. UFC Fight Night goes down this Saturday at the TD Place Arena in Ottawa, Ontario. The welterweight main event, five rounds. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson taking on the Red King, Rory MacDonald. And, I mean, that right there is all you need to see. I know the card is littered with great fights. Sam Alvey and our guy Elias Theodoro.
Sam, too.
We like Sam, too.
Yeah, hair versus teeth.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot
hair
of fun.
Versus teeth.
However, you can take, believe it or not, you can take Rory MacDonald and Stephen Thompson out of this fight card and put Donald Cerrone and Patrick Cote, and I guarantee the action that the fans are going to get to see from that welterweight matchup is going to just, I think people are going to be very, very satisfied. And I think specifically they're going to be satisfied because I think even though we saw kind of breakout performances from Pat in the Ben Saunders fight, I think you're going to see the breakout performance from Pat in this fight with Donald Cerrone.
I think so too. And I think it's an incredibly hard fight for Cerrone. First of all, Cerrone will fight whoever.
Yeah.
Like, so people, name power, titles and rankings and, you know, position on a card and you know, the no-win situation. He doesn't give a crap about any of that stuff. It's like, who do I fight on what date? And how much are you going to pay me?
Yeah.
You know, and so he'll show up and he will fight. And every fight he's in will be amazing. And but it's tricky. We don't often think of him as a trap setter. But go back and look at some of the fights. I mean, McDessie broke his jaw, set a little trap for him. There was a head kick, a Brazilian guy he had kicked out.
Martins
trapped him. Set him up for that head kick. He's got a lot, especially with his kicks, his outside ranges, kicking the legs. He's got a lot of things he sets up and traps you.
Yeah.
It's a small trick, small adjustment. You think it's going there, you think it's going there, and it goes there, or little things like that. He's smart. A lot smarter. You think of him as cowboy hat and his beard and
that's
stuff.
What you think of.
Yeah, he's very smart. But Pat doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and Pat's so experienced, you're not going to find his mistake, and it's hard to trick him into one. So this is a harder fight for Cowboy Cerrone than a lot of his recent fights, and Pat will be coming at him, hitting him like a real striking welterweight, like a real hard striking middleweight.
What I like about Patrick Cote, I mean, with one of the reasons why is because I think about some of the greatest moments of our career, getting to be at the Bell Center to call Patrick Cote's fight. And again, there was a lot of great UFC fighters that you know, at the time, they were part of the Quebec scene. They would go on to fight in the UFC. Val Letourneau, who fought for the title, was on that card. Yeah. Mitch Gagnon as well. So it was just a great thrill for us. Mm. We got to see the evolution of Patrick Cote's game from a physical standpoint. But I think the biggest thing we always took out of our time with Patrick Cote is how sharp mentally this guy is. A, he's a soldier. Went to Bosnia. So to get inside of a cage, it's like, I've gone to war.
Yeah.
So this is fine with me. And then you surround yourself with good people and you're mentally driven to do the things that you need to do when you know that your body can handle it, which, again, Patrick Cote went back to school to learn about his body and just to have those different layers. And then on top of that, he doesn't need to be doing
and now,
this.
Commentary doesn't need to, among his other things. But commentary also allows you to learn, forces you to learn so much. Stan, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Hardy, I can't wait to see Hardy fight again.
Cruz.
Dominic Cruz, how could that guy have got better? Oh, he got better even while not training. It makes you better. It forces you to learn. And it puts you in so many situations. But so we have to ask ourselves, because we've seen so much of him at such a high level and we've been around him and got insight into him, we'll have a bias. We'll have a bias. Now, we're not cheering for Pat because he's Canadian or because we know him, but we'll have a bias because the information we've got gives us a little bit of a bias. Bias isn't negative, necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's always people assume it is. But, we have an information bias. We have a lot of information, so we think he's really good. But people who don't know Pat, they have a bias, a lack of information bias, a lack of environment bias, a lack of being able to. So you're biased no matter what. You're biased no matter what. So all you can do is work with the information you have. And breaking down fights and showing the different aspects of fights like our job is, the further we get into it, the more we realize when. And if there's anybody out there telling you how a fight will go, you can say, Pat's going to win by first round knockout.
Mm-hmm. Pat could win by first round
knockout. And if he does, you'll seem brilliant.
Yeah.
And if Cowboy lands, you know, a left hook, low kick, overhand right on him and lays him out, you'll look like an idiot.
Yeah.
The truth is, you could put 100 or 200 picks and people will remember, oh man, this guy said that Holly Holm was going to knock out Ronda Rousey. They won't remember when you said that Steve Bosse was going to beat that guy who kicked him in the head in 30 seconds. We've started to really understand that our job is to present all of the mysteries.
Yeah.
Find most of the mysteries that are there, you don't even see. So we're supposed to go out and find them. But if you watch us enough, what you end up discovering is just how even more confusing and how even more variables there are. We believe that makes fighting more interesting.
Yeah,
makes it more interesting for us.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Pat, like our Pat, we feel a little stronger about. But seriously, Wonder Boy and Rory, really? Do we know?
No,
does
we don't know.
Anybody
knows.
Really know?
Nobody
even
knows.
If they guess.
Yeah.
And they're right. They don't,
they don't know.
Nobody knows.
We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, more of Five Rounds Today. We're discussing UFC Fight Night Ottawa. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramteen and Black with you. We are discussing UFC Fight Night Ottawa. Rory McDonald, Stephen Thompson in the main event, five rounds. You would imagine that Stephen Thompson, with an impressive victory, would get the call if he was to manage to look good against Rory McDonald and get the victory. I'm not convinced that if Rory won this fight that he'd be getting the call to fight Robbie Lawler, because people have already seen him lose to Robbie Lawler twice, and we know that the UFC, what they
want. But that last fight was so
epic. It was, sure, but he's already lost twice to him. It's a hard sell, and we know that the UFC, as much as they want to put cool fights on, they want to put the biggest fights on as humanly possible. And I don't know if that would be the fight. If Rory won this fight just after being stopped by Robbie in his last fight, if that would be the fight. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If it's, I mean, there's so many variables in this, too. And most of them are like perception and momentum and enthusiasm and star moments and whatever. So if you imagine Rory's face is all messed up and he finishes Wonderboy with
screaming.
Blood shooting out of his mouth,
true.
Screaming for,
you
yeah,
can,
boom,
yeah,
it's
you're
done.
Right. You can see how that
But
happens.
If Rory goes, you know what I'd like, you know.
And then Nick Diaz gets the call. after the Tyron Woodley fight.
Exactly. And then Rory is going to probably, this is his last fight, so he's going to get an offer from the competition, and then all that's going to happen. So, because if you get an offer from the competition, your boss has the right to match it. That'll go on.
And do you think that changes anything? Does that add any pressure to Rory McDonald, knowing, okay, this is the last fight on my contract? Of course, the number two organization, Bellator, word is that they've already put an offer out into the world.
They've allowed. This is interesting. Legally, they cannot put an offer to him. But if they go and around their office,
a teammate of his told me.
Yeah, like, but if they go around their office and they say, "Hey guys, we think we're going to give this much," then they put it out on somebody mentions it to another guy, and it gets back to his teammate. Then he ends up hearing about it. There's no law against allowing information to leave your office and end up in the hands of a teammate who might say, "Hey, it's probably going to be in the millions by the time we talk about fights." You assume that there's that thing in Rory that's just about competition and about fighting, and in his case, violence too.
But now he's going to be a dad.
Yeah, well, that's true. And if you lose this fight, maybe the UFC wouldn't match that offer. I'm still going to make a whole bunch of money, and I'm going to fight lower-level guys. Mm-hmm. Probably hurt
However,
them.
Ben Henderson thought he was going to fight lower-level guys, and Andrei Koroshkov nearly killed him.
Koroshkov
and Rory, 170 pounds. Ben Henderson and Rory, 170 pounds.
See, but those fights are still, you know.
Of course. There are ways away.
When you know your family is taking care of win or lose, how does that affect you or I? Probably different than it affects this savage.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. Yeah, who knows? I mean, all those things matter. You're having a child, you know, that's new.
Mm-hmm.
When you had your first child, your whole world probably seemed different from the moment it was happening. I've never had that experience, but I assume that.
Especially at this stage, you know, his daughter's supposed to be born in the next month or so. So you're getting ready for this huge fight in your nation's capital. Mm-hmm. This is your home soil, only an hour and a half away from where you train, where you currently call home. You're dealing with all these emotions of this is the last fight on your contract, coming off of that fight with Robbie, which was in, when was that, in December?
Yeah.
All of these factors is like, how will this guy be able to perform?
They don't know.
Where Stephen Thompson is like, I just killed the former welterweight champion. I did what Robbie Lawler couldn't do to this guy, what George St. Pierre couldn't do. I am the man, and I'm going to smoke this this water boy.
Yeah, and that's... But at the same time, it's like, Rory goes into the gym when he hasn't been there for days, and just destroys the world class of the world class. Grabs a hold of them and taps them out in a second. Bullies them around. People's minds are blown. People who are there constantly.
I think, so when you were talking earlier about the levels, you know, you talk about your level and then into the, you know, LA MMQ in Montreal, then to the Legacy of the Titan, the RFA. It's like John Jones. People are like, well, this guy doesn't come to the gym.
Yeah.
And then he smokes everybody because there are different levels. Not everybody needs to do the things that everybody else is doing. Look at Michael Bisping.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all true. And so much of it is in the mind now. We don't know. And you can't know. And that's why, like we were saying, that's why these fights become so exciting. And that's why they also need to be revered. There are moments in time that, you know, were created where these people are going to harm themselves to find out the truths about themselves and about combat and to be tested and pushed. We, the observers, are going to see it happen, marvel at the skill and the risks that they take and what they're able to put themselves through, learn things about the evolution of how men fight, all of these things, and be inspired by what humans are capable of, what we can overcome. All of that happens, and we cannot just, you know, distill it down to a Twitter beef or what's next for this guy. We need to honor these moments, and that's what we do, and that's what we're going to do in Ottawa, and that's what we're going to do all week, and that's what we're going to do on Saturday night.
So many cool fights. Jehad Herrera taking on Ali Bagutinov, Joe Munier and Colby Covington. Joe Munier, a rising star at the TriStar Gym.
He's in for Garcia, right?
He's in for Alex Garcia, who's forced to pull out of this fight. Joe Munier, 7-0. I think he's from Quebec and spends time training with the guys at TriStar in Montreal. Jocelyn Jones-Lieberger taking on your girl, Randa Markos, Sam Alvey, Elias Theodoro, Joe Soto, Chris Beal. There's so many great cards. Jason Sago, Misha Cirkunov also on the card. Joanne Calderwood in Valeturno, 125-pound
fight. Val's going to look good at 125.
This is the weight division for her, I think. And do you get the sense that this is a test to see how many other girls will make that move down from 135 pounds to 25, can't quite make it to 115, and then a division will open up?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, there's not becoming less cards, and so there's not becoming less fight slots to fill. And, you know, it depends the direction of where the business is going to. There's a million business things still to unfold in the next couple of years, TV contracts being up and stuff. But don't be surprised to see more divisions. You know, the sport's not going away.
That's the problem with boxing, though. I mean, people don't like it because it's very confusing for people to try to stay, to keep track of all the different divisions, 115, 125, 115. Is there going to be a 115 guys division?
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably not. But
I called some out of Shooto Brazil.
Exactly.
They were under one. There was a 108-pounder. He was good. He was fast, long, and thin. Neat stuff. But yeah, there are certain things that some mainstream, we have a hard time, even other fight fans that we know and hang out with and are around, are, I don't want to watch the 125ers. I think if they view them differently, if they look at them, they get a new perspective, I think they might. But there's a certain point at which, quite wrongly, some men think that 125-pound men do not hit hard.
Yeah.
And I'd love Demetrius Johnson to put one on
that.
A couple of these guys.
Again, Demetrius Johnson kind of looks menacing. Yeah. So what you need...
He's muscular.
That's right.
Fast.
You need a small, intimidating, unintimidating guy.
Horiguchi?
Horiguchi. He looks like a... However, he's got cauliflower ears. Yeah. So Dustin Ortiz, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Scoggins.
Scoggins.
Justin Scoggins.
Get him in like a Hawaiian shirt.
Exactly.
Little dude.
Smokes you in 2 seconds.
Jumping spin kicks you unconscious. I mean, it's wrong that a guy 175, 180 pounds thinks he can beat Justin Scoggins. He is incorrect.
Yeah.
But it's and I say this from a lifetime of study of combat.
185 pound regular Joe.
Regular Joe.
Regular Joe.
Not Elias.
Because Elias Theodoro would be like, I would kill that little
kid. That kid, he would kick Elias a lot of times in the legs before that happened. Also, it depends on the cage size. Do we have a full size cage? Scoggins is in it for a bit. We have a small cage. He's a dead man.
We're going to take another time out. When we come back, we're looking ahead to the show, one of three shows in Las Vegas that you can catch live right here on Fight Network in Canada. It is the UFC Lightweight Championship of the World, RDA versus Eddie Alvarez. Don't go anywhere. More five rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. Coming up on July 7th at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. UFC, what are they calling this? UFC Fight Night, Dos Anjos versus Alvarez. But check out some of the names on this card.
You have Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar's not on this
Brock
card.
Brock Lesnar's on this
UFC
card.
UFC 200, Brock Lesnar, Mark Hunt. On this card, however, Gilbert Burns on the card, Mike Pyle on the card, Anthony Berchek on the card, our man John McDessie on the card, Alan Joban on the card, Mitch Clark versus Joe Duffy, Roy Nelson versus Derek Lewis, and of course, the lightweight championship of the world up for grabs as RDA looks to defend his title against
Brock Lesnar.
No, not Brock Lesnar. However, he's a guy as tough as Brock Lesnar, and I think
just as big,
and maybe not just as big, but I think potentially he could be just as big, because of the Eddie Alvarez fighting style that we've seen him employ throughout his career. However, Eddie Alvarez says no more.
Yeah.
I'm not fighting the Eddie Alvarez style anymore. I'm evolved.
Okay. And I think
that's wise.
I think that's
wise. He's got kids.
He's got kids.
Yeah.
And I want, as a fan of Eddie Alvarez, I want Eddie Alvarez to be the champion.
Yeah.
And I want him to win at the highest level.
But didn't you want him to win based on the style that you saw of Eddie Alvarez throughout his time in Bodog or his time in Dream?
Yes. I am going to take just a little credit.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm going to go and say I had something to do with this.
Yeah.
I created something called the Sapp-Alvarez scale. And on the bottom end, so it was risk-taking behavior and willingness and ability to tolerate suffering.
Yes.
And at the bottom end was Bob Sapp.
Yep.
You can go find this on the internet. It was a piece, early breakdown that I did that I really had fun doing.
We loved it.
Yeah, it was so much fun to do. And it's pseudoscience, you know, but it gives you ideas. It was meant to instigate conversation. And so Bob Sapp at the bottom level. Now, and that is no disrespect to Bob Sapp, and I mean that. Bob Sapp said, I'm going to go make a living as an entertainer.
Yep.
If you people don't like it, that I'm going to go in and throw a couple of punches and then, if it
gets, I'm going to bail whenever it's time for me to bail.
I wouldn't pay to see him fight. But if I was already seeing the show, it's like it comes out with a boa and it puts on the thing. That's his choice, man. It's people who've never been kicked in the head who belittle Bob Sapp. Now, if your argument is, you know, Bob, why even doing this? That's Bob's that's Bob's choice to say.
Just people are paying me to
do it. And Bob retired with university degrees and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And good for him, man. You live your own life. You do you. On the top of that was Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah.
It was called the Sapp-Alvarez scale because Eddie Alvarez was the ultimate risk taker, and he fought as a sensation seeker. And I used his own words in it that he said, this is about giving it and taking it all the same, and nobody can do it like me. Shots of him bloodied up, the Bellator fights.
Now, Michael Chandler.
Yeah. And Michael Chandler is one of my all-time favorites, too. And my friend Evan Boris, who has worked with both of those guys, in fact, said that conversation started people, the Sapp-Alvarez scale and the conversation around it started Eddie examining the way he fought and thinking, because also in it there was a championship range. Eddie Alvarez was way outside of it. And the championship range is less risk-taking, putting yourself through less suffering, finding ways that you don't need to suffer because it can end up in a loss. It can end up in damage. Mm-hmm. So that conversation, according to my friends at the Black Zillions, started that. So it's a neat thing to feel like ideas that you put into the world affect people. But then I thought about it after. Maybe I should change it to the Sapp-Lozon scale or the Sapp-Sanchez scale. Yeah. But I'm going to keep it, if we revisit it again, I'm going to keep it the Sapp-Alvarez scale in celebration of those great fights that Eddie gave.
Yeah,
that was the hardest level, the furthest reaches of going out and fighting that way. And he should be celebrated forever for it. And just because he realized he can make just as much money, one day be a UFC champion, protect his own body and his brain, and go out and fight different, I'm not going to penalize him from that scale. It's going to be the Sapp-Alvarez scale forever.
I will tell you what is remarkable when you look at Eddie Alvarez. 32 years of age, record is 27 victories, 4 losses, 14 knockouts, 7 submissions. And just the journey that he has had throughout his career, defeating Anthony Pettis and Gil Melendez, fighting Cerrone, had that fight with Michael Chandler, a couple fights with Michael Chandler, the one that he lost and the one that he won, Patricky Pitbull, Roger Huerta, Katsunori Kikuno, just so many, Shin Aoki, Taichi Kawajiri.
Frenzied firefights.
Yeah, firefights.
Frenzied fights where part of the fight was him saying, you can't take it as much as I can, and we'll take it there. And we celebrate those fights, but we also celebrate the fact, and not everybody does. People are like, oh, you know, he's a lame prey guy, he's boring. This is on us, the people who talk, who help try our best to share fights. It's on us to show people that there is beauty in controlling another person's body.
That doesn't want to be controlled.
That doesn't want to be controlled in a way that doesn't get you hurt. And Eddie Alvarez is a genius. He's always been a genius. He's just taken that last step now so he can still fight for 7 or 8 years if he wants to and minimize the damage and maybe be a UFC champion. He could be the UFC champion in 3 weeks.
I know. It's really remarkable. And again, just his importance, you know, helping to build the Bodog brand and, you know, the Bellator brand.
Sengoku.
And after Pride died, and, you know, the Dream brand. There was just so many reasons that Eddie Alvarez deserves this this title fight, much like Michael Bisping, because everything he has done for mixed martial arts in his own way. We're going to take another time out. We come back. We're going to wrap things up on this edition of Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. We are heading off to Ottawa this week. Of course, the UFC coming down the pipe on Saturday night. Rory McDonald, Stephen Thompson, Cerrone, Patrick Cote, our guys Mish Sirkinov and Jay Sago in action. Elias Theodoro as well. And as I talked about before, coming up next month, we have that championship fight, the 155-pound title up for grabs, RDA, Eddie Alvarez. That's a huge week in combat sports. Our man Wei Ting and John Pollock, I believe, will be.
Yeah, Wei is fighting Brock Lesnar.
That's not happening. However, Brock Lesnar will be in the house.
Fighting Pollock.
I would pay
for
that.
How fast he'd kill those two guys. Oh, man, that'd be just a grease spot on the mat.
However, Brock Lesnar, now an honorary Canadian, going to be fighting out of Saskatchewan, apparently. So we'll see the Canadian flag right beside Brock Lesnar.
And don't get me wrong. Brock Lesnar would stain us.
All of us.
All of us. That is not a knock against Wei or Pollock. Any one of us.
To show you how powerful this guy is, Google Brock Lesnar, YouTube Brock Lesnar dragging the deer out of a little lake,
or that backflip style. Look up some of his old wrestling,
just
his college
insane.
Wrestling. The things
do you think
do.
He's been training all this time? Has he? It's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to do kickboxing for a couple of weeks. I'm going to do some jiu-jitsu during those years that Brock Lesnar was absent from the UFC, doing his WWE thing. Do you think the bug had bitten him? Had he realized that he's a martial artist and I need to go and train because it's in me now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't think he signs that contract until he'd already been training and ragdolling people. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need anything. He wants to prove something. I think he's been training. That'd be my guess. You look at that other guy with the X's on his hands, CM Punk. Yeah. That guy literally took his first striking class after he signed the contract. That says you're not a real fighter.
Yeah.
You might like jiu-jitsu a lot, but it's all day one is striking. That's insanity. This is not that. And if you've anyone...
Shane Carwin has punched Brock Lesnar in the face.
Yeah, and there's always these books on guys, these facts that we all... Oh, he doesn't like getting hit. Well, of course not. Nobody likes getting hit, but he can take a shot. Go back and watch the abuse from Shane Carwin and tell
crazy.
Me that he can't have. That's insanity. But I think he is ready to go. And anyone who's ever been really, really sick with anything, you don't know how sick you were till you're healthy again. And I think Brock Lesnar became healthy and realized he fought at a 4 out of 10 physically. And now he's at a 9.5 or a 10.
Holy smokes. Brock Lesnar going down at UFC 200, taking on Mark Hunt.
Talk about it next week.
We're going to talk about it next week. However, Ottawa this weekend, Saturday night, Rory McDonald and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, the co-feature Patrick Cote and Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Got to thank my broadcast partner, Robin Black, Chase Kaiser, for always running the board. And we want to thank you for tuning in. I'm John Ramdean. We'll see you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.